So, the talk tonight in our series, Dharma Practice in the City. And this particular evening, our topic is the public transport. And I've actually been really enjoying preparing this talk and clarifying my thoughts about this topic and sort of using the creativity to think about all these topics. I've been really enjoying myself. So I hope you catch a bit of that. I'll just say that I think especially people now, in our modern times, we've got such busy lives, and it seems like, I looked this up actually, that an average Londoner, this is actually the highest amount in the whole country, so an average Londoner spends about 277 hours a year on the public transport, going to work and coming back from work, which comes down to about 5 hours and 18 minutes in a week. And I must say, I don't know how that sounds for you, but I think I probably do more than that, 5 hours and 18 minutes, I probably do more than that in a week. But this is average, so it also takes into account people going on holidays, etc. But just imagine all this time that you're spending on public transport. I think a lot of people see it as wasted time. And what I'm going to propose is that you could actually use this time. It's actually really fertile ground for any kind of Buddhist practice. So I'd like us to not see it as wasted time, but actually as an opportunity to learn and to practice. So that's what I propose. So I personally have found this area of integrating Buddhist practice in daily life a really, really interesting topic. So I've always been interested in exploring how to bring more Dharma practice into a work situation. So in that sense, for me, exploring this topic, Dharma practice on public transport is just a bit like a pet topic, really, for me. So just to say, just bringing us back, thinking back about the Buddha. I've looked up a bit about the Buddha, because I was thinking, in this day and age, we're travelling so much, I was just thinking how Buddha had looked in the time when the Buddha was travelling to India. And actually, I think there's evidence in the text that the Buddha spent quite a lot of time on the road. He really spent a huge amount of time on the road. He covered, in his life, he covered hundreds and hundreds of kilometres. You could see the area, you could map out the area where the Buddha used to travel, but he would always travel on foot, so he would often be barefoot, or I think there's an occasional reference to the Buddha wearing some sandals, but the evidence is usually he would be barefoot. And at the time of the Buddha, it was very, very dangerous to travel, and so he'd be travelling or walking through wilderness, or there wouldn't be any food, there wouldn't be any drink, there wouldn't be any shelter, there would be bandits, you know, there would be bandits that he would run into that would threaten his life, and there would be wild rivers in the rainy seasons that he had to cross. But he did occasionally, apparently, use a boat or a ferry, so that's the kind of public transport that the Buddha did get into. But he did not, there is no evidence in the Pali Canon apparently that he even went onto a cart or anything on wheels, he just walked basically. So I just thought that would be just good to remember if we think about that and think about how safe it is usually to travel, how easy it is for us to travel, how we can cover kilometres and kilometres and kilometres really quite easily. I just thought that would be a good place to start thinking from.
Did he have an Oyster card doing that?
Yes.
He did.
Probably. I don't know what for, actually. Oh, never mind. So, and also the Buddha, I just wanted to say that I structured this talk according to the foundations of mindfulness. So the Buddha, all through the Pali Canon, I guess, encourages us to be mindful, and particularly in the Satipatthana Sutta, he encourages us to be mindful when we're standing, or sitting, or walking, or lying down, or eating. So the advice of the Buddha is being mindful whilst you're on the public transport. So that's one of the things I think we could learn from the Buddha. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, just a quote from that. So when going forward or going back, he, and that's the practitioner, she, is clearly aware of what he or she is doing. In looking forward or looking back, he's clearly aware of what he is doing. In bending and stretching, he's clearly aware of what he's doing. In carrying his robe and his bowl, he's clearly aware of what he's doing. So just that just continues in that vein. So just imagine being in public transport and just knowing you're sitting there, you're sitting on a chair, you're moving in a train, you're moving on a bus. Just being aware of what you're actually doing. So that's the advice of the Buddha for us on the public transport. So I was saying that I structured the talk on the basis of the Satipatthana, which is the four foundations of mindfulness. And the four foundations of mindfulness, I think many of us know, but I'll say the first one would be mindfulness of body. And then you've got mindfulness of feeling, it's also known Vedana. And then you've got mindfulness of mind states. And then the last one is mindfulness of, Sangha Rakshita, who's founded our movement, calls it reality. And I'll say a bit about that. But so the same person, so Sangha Rakshita, who founded our movement, he added a few dimensions to these four foundations of mindfulness. And so what he is saying is first, there's awareness of the physical environment, and then you've got awareness of self, and then you've got awareness of other people, and then lastly awareness of reality. So I've kind of collapsed the whole thing, and so that will be roughly the way this talk is going to be structured. So that means that we've got to start somewhere, and I think we've got to start just a tiny bit with mindfulness itself. So the word mindfulness, sati's got this element of recollection in it, which is remembering. So whilst on the public transport, that's the first thing. Remember that this is an opportunity for practice. So that's where it's got to start, you remembering that this is an opportunity for practice. And actually, my second precept always on the public transport is relax, relax, relax. And I think I can't say that to myself enough whilst on the public transport. Relax, relax, relax. So we start with the awareness of physical environment. And some of this, I must say, might be a bit associative. It's just thoughts that have come up for me thinking about this particular topic. But just say the awareness of physical environment. I think that the city has got all these different atmospheres, all these different places that have particular atmospheres. Like right now, we're at the Buddhist Center, so in a particular kind of atmosphere. We can think about a cafe where we've been, you know, this afternoon, which has got a particular atmosphere. And you can go to a shop, you know, you take a train to Bond Street and you walk, you come out the underground and you also have this particular atmosphere happening. So that is quite an interesting thing that whenever, especially in London, I think, or a big city, any kind of big city, you get on the public transport, you're in a particular atmosphere, and you in transition, and you end up in another atmosphere. So there's something about that which I think is really interesting. So there is this journey, which is quite special. That journey can be used as an opportunity to make a particular mental transition as well, or even an emotional transition. And it's quite an interesting thing in itself, going from place to place, I think we're all familiar with the concept of the pilgrimage, for instance, which is also quite interesting. People doing a lot of work on themselves by travelling from one place to another. So something sort of seems to happen in that transition from one place to another. And I just really want to use this word. This is one of my favourite words, which is liminal. Mm. I love the word liminal. So something about public transport being a liminal space, and limen, I think, in Latin means threshold. So a liminal space would be like a transitional space. So that's just a few thoughts about that, from moving from one place to another, and just having this broad awareness of what kind of atmosphere you find yourself in. And, well, just some associations, really, with the underground, which I think is quite a curious phenomenon. So you've got in London, we've got the underground, and I know, I'm sure, bigger cities have the underground as well. But I think you can turn this, going into the underground, into a conscious act. She could actually really think, I'm now going to go into the underground. Which is quite interesting, but it is something about promising yourself, undertaking to be aware. And also, I think, going into the underground in classical literature and in our own experience is something about getting to know the shadow places, getting to know the difficult places. So I think also in terms of the Buddhist path, it's, I think, something about transforming these darker spaces into lighter spaces. So I'm sure that that's not literally going to happen, but it's just something that you could just think about or use as a resolve. I'm going to explore this. I'm going to undertake to explore this area. And I think something about the underground and journeying, it can be quite scary because often it is a journey into the unknown because you're leaving a familiar place and you're not quite sure what's going to happen and you're in the space of transition. And I think that kind of not knowing what's going to happen can trigger off a lot of anxiety and fear in people. And also I think in the underground, I know people who never use the underground because they've got these fears of being buried alive or being stuck in a tunnel. I think you know these people as well, but there's something quite deeply human about these fears that we have around the underground. So I think that is just something quite interesting, and I think you might recognise this moment that you're in this very busy commuter's train and the train gets stuck in the tunnel and it's really hot. You've got all these people kind of squeezed, and I don't know whether I'm alone in this, but sometimes I get this kind of bit of a feeling of claustrophobia coming up, which is quite interesting. It's quite interesting in itself. And I think Paramananda the last week talked a bit about the darker side, as I believe he's talked a bit about that last week, and he, I think he also mentioned Tom Lin. So traditionally, the practice of Tom Lin, which is breathing and receiving, kind of breathing in, you're breathing in painful or suffering, or it's that kind of image, and you're breathing out light. Is something that you could use while you're on the public transport and you feel that sense of claustrophobia. It's something you could actually start doing, which is this practice of Tom Lin. So you're breathing in this feeling of claustrophobia and you're breathing out some light. And you can also imagine that this is the human condition, that everybody else, well, not everybody, but a lot of the other people are in exactly the same situation, and they might also have mental anxieties, they might feel fear, they might feel all sorts of things. So it's an opportunity to connect to other people in your imagination and breathe that in and breathe out space and breathe out freedom and the hope that everybody will be okay. So it's just something about that. It's quite interesting if you can practice that, use it as a practice. So that is roughly what I've got to say about this awareness of physical environment. Some of these areas overlap a bit, so you'll see. So we move on to awareness of self. And so we've got this awareness of self, which is divided first into this part about awareness of body. And I just wanted to say a bit about the body, and this is actually coming from my own experience, is that years ago I went on a three-month retreat, and so staying in the same place for 3 months, and then all of a sudden being in a car, moving through France, and feeling really, it's just so ever so weird, because I felt my body, just because I've been 3 months in the same place, felt really rooted and at home, and relax into the landscape, and all of a sudden I was wheeled away, as it were, to a speeding away, and it felt quite disembodying somehow, that experience. So I think maybe on the basis of that, I don't know, but I think a lot of the time the processes that are happening in our body take time to catch up with us. So that's also why I often say before the meditation, just give yourself some time to arrive, because I think the body needs time to arrive. And we are so used to going here, going there, going on planes, going doing this, going that. I think we often forget that the body just needs to get used to its own place on a very primal level. Because you simply, if your body doesn't quite know where everything is, there's might be a sense of underlying stress or anxiety coming up. So that, I thought, is interesting in relation to being on a train or on a bus. So, but you can, whilst you're on public transport, do some body awareness practice, especially if you feel quite heady, or your thoughts are carried away, or it's sort of the atmosphere is a bit disturbing, and any of these situations. You can start doing some practices that will allow you to feel a bit more rooted whilst you're doing that journey. So it's actually quite easy. You could just start to follow the breath, for instance. If you remember doing this, that is a very easy way to connect to the body in that situation whilst you're on the public transport. Or another way of doing it is doing this kind of body scan that we're quite used to at this centre, hearing. And just thinking about your feet, and this is a tip, on longer journeys, it's great to take your shoes off, because something about this the soles of the shoes and being on the public transport make it even a bit more difficult. So if you take them off, you just feel more rooted in the body. At least that's my experience. Anyway, I just thought practical tip, and any sort of thoughts.
That means I have to have fresh socks on.
Yes, yes. But you've got to have an extra pair in your bag. And just to say, if you do the mindfulness of breathing on the public transport, whether it's a bus or an underground train, you could use the stops as stages in the meditation. So I heard this some time ago. I thought it was quite clever, but I think it's been around forever, that idea of using the stops in the underground. So just use the stops in the underground. And even if you're on a longer journey, you use two stops of the underground, for instance, for phase one and two for phase, and etc. And you could do the same with a metabarber, I guess. But I think it's quite a clever way of doing some practice on the public transport. So that's what I've got to say about the body, the awareness of body. Now we've got awareness of feeling. And actually, so the word that's used in the Satipatthana Sutta is actually Vedana, which is different, slightly different from how we understand the word feeling in English. So in this particular stage, we don't mean feelings as emotions that erupt in us, but it's very simple. Svedana just means pleasant or unpleasant. So it's a very simple sensation in the body that, or in the mind that feels pleasant or unpleasant. That's it, really. So that is something I wanted to say about this, actually. When I started learning about Buddhism, I heard these theories about how to work with the mind, and I heard about this thing called gap. Have you heard of it, that in Buddhist practice? Well, so the thing is, I heard about this gap, and the gap is in Buddhist practice is that you've got body, you've got mind, there's something coming in, an impulse coming in that means that's contact, and you've got a particular feeling tone to that, might be pleasant or unpleasant. But what happens afterwards, if you're not aware of that process happening is that you might start to think loads and loads of thoughts, for instance. So the gap moment is, so, and you go on the autopilot, as it were. So the gap moment would be that you're simply experiencing that sensation of pleasant or unpleasant, and that's it. And that's kind of, that's when you can choose to not act as on the autopilot, not do what you always do, but consciously choose a different way of acting. So it's quite a core teaching in Buddhism. So I heard about this, the gap, and then later I heard about Mind the Gap in London. So it's always is hilarious, this thing about Mind the Gap, because it is an instruction for mindfulness, really. I know this is an open door, because most of you have heard this, but I just thought it was... I just think it's a great teaching, Mind the Gap. So every time you hear Mind the Gap, you could remember to go back to experiencing the body, experiencing pleasant or unpleasant, and then just leaving it at that somehow, if you can. Going back and back and back to that. So in another way of doing that is, it's another practice that you might want to do one day, if you remember, is to just sit there. It's especially useful if you feel a bit agitated or irritated or that kind of thing. You just sit there and you listen to the sounds and you smell the smells, and that's the only thing you do. It will be, it's quite interesting what happens then, because it just seems like you're creating a lot more space in your awareness somehow. You kind of, just by listening to sound or smelling smell and just leaving it that, it just creates peace and more awareness. And something you might consider taking up, it's not too much. So, moving on to awareness of mind states. And I think I'm not alone in that travel can always, not always, but can often make me anxious. So somehow travel and anxiety seem to go hand to hand a lot. And I think when you're anxious, you're more narrowed down, there's less mindfulness happening. And I think then maybe what will happen is you start to be in a bit of a bubble of your own, and that you're kind of losing connection to other people, and maybe also start to experience people, other people, as sort of in the way and irritating. You know, you kind of want to push them away because you want to get out or you want to do your thing. So I think that is in itself just noticing that, noticing, so the anxiety, for instance, is a mind state, you could say. So just noticing that, it could just be really, really interesting to start paying attention to those mind states whilst you're on the public transport. So, and I've also mentioned, for instance, there's fear often coming up in relation to public transport. It might be just fear because you're stuck in a tunnel, or it might be fear because you're on a platform and there's a load of other people coming in, or you might be all alone on the platform and you might be afraid that somebody might come and, you know, attack you or whatever. Or you might just be on the platform on your own with one mad person or one drunk person. So there's all that stuff that can happen on the public transport, which is quite interesting. And it is, you could just see it as an opportunity to start to pay attention to what's happening in the mind. So what is your reaction? What is happening, actually? To be really, really curious about it. Just be really, just investigate it. See what's happening. Look what's happening. And I think for me personally, I find the bus often more nerve-wracking than the train. And actually, whilst I was on the bus, I wrote a bit more. So you've got all this traffic, you can get stuck in traffic, and you've got all these passengers coming and going. And I also wrote, last time I was on the bus, you get the skills of the driver. You get that as well, you know, you get these drivers in the bus. And anyway, so and another thing that I find especially irritating on the bus is people talking in the, you know, on their mobile phones in languages I can't understand. which is totally irrational, but I'm just noticing that in relation to that, irritation comes up for me. You know? And so at that, I'm just inviting everyone just to see if you can learn from that. Because what I often do is, when I hear somebody talking, and I find, oh, they've got a really grating voice, I know, you know, they don't really have a grating voice, it's me. That maybe I need a bit more space, I need to relax, I need to remember to relax, or I just need to get a bit of time on my own. It's that kind of thing. I just notice that, and then it tells me something about myself, and sometimes I can then choose a particular condition that will influence me in a more positive kind of way, because I think one of the interesting things about being on the public transport is exactly that you do not have control about the conditions on the public transport. You kind of, you know, that is just what happens. There's not a lot of influence you can have on whether the train is stopping or going or stuck. Or so there is no control about all of that. So it's just, and then if you do find yourself in a situation, just notice what arises. Just notice what arises in you in terms of emotions. And another thing is just really interesting is that you see these people and you've got these instant judgments coming up. You don't like their hat. You think they look nice. You think, I don't like that person, or that person is a horrible person, or I don't know. You know, you've got all these thoughts coming up about people. So that in itself is also just very, very interesting. So you could just see it as very, very interesting to just see, just noticing what is coming up for me in relation to the people I meet. Anyway, I've got here again, relax, relax. Because I do think that in London, things are a bit more tight than in other places, and you get people getting angry because the tube has 2 minutes of delay. They've got to wait for 2 full minutes, and you see people go, 2 minutes, which is, you know, I think typical for London. So I just wanted to say that I think the London transport system is just totally, totally fantastic. It really is totally fantastic. And just thinking about, you know, okay, the train is 2 minutes late, but the abundance of it all, and the fact that you can get from one place to another, and it's fairly cheap, relatively cheap, I think that is, as a reflection of gratitude, might also be an interesting practice, just reflecting on gratitude in relation to this public transport. And so it's a gift, and it's a supportive condition in our existence, because it can connect us to each other, it can bring us from work to play to, you know, to the Buddhist Centre. So, public transport as a gift. And another thing in relation to fear, any fear coming up in public transport, mantras, really. I've noticed I remember having a retreat, this is in Finland, actually to a place called, it's Abayaloka, isn't it? It's called, which is actually the fearless place. And it was the winter that the euro had been introduced. So it's like, it was, I looked it up, it's 2002. So I was on a plane from Helsinki to Amsterdam, and there was a lot of turbulence. And I got, you know, scared. And I just noticed that I just started doing a mantra in my mind. The mantra started to play, and it really helped me. It really helped me, feeling much more peaceful. So just to say, in terms of Dharma practice, public transport, if you do know a mantra, just try it out once in a while, see if it works for you. Okay, so I've got another area. So we've moved through the all the mindfulnesses of self, as it were. So we've moved through the three dimensions there. And now, awareness of others. I should actually say we've moved to the awareness of environment, awareness of self, and now we're moving into awareness of others. That's it. So, a lot of the thoughts I've written down here are around metta And I think you might know that poem by William Blake. I really love that poem, actually. So I wander through each chartered street, near where the chartered Thames does flow, and mark in every face I meet marks of weakness, marks of woe. I've always found that really beautiful poem. I'll read that out again. I wander through each chartered street, near where the chartered Thames thus flow, and mark in every face I meet marks of weakness, marks of woe. So it's something, I think, obviously, really quite sad, and I think William Blake actually tapping into a lot of suffering, in the human condition, but somehow, I'm going to turn it around completely, because I think for me, it's completely turned around. So for me, now, for instance, when I'm on one of those escalators in the underground, for instance, the one in Holborn, for instance, that's quite a long one, isn't it? So you're on this escalator and there's all these people, all these faces coming down, and I don't see marks of woe. I just see hope, I see effort, I see kindness, I see people feeling a bit desperate or vulnerable. There's all these positive qualities, really. So that's a joy. I really find it a joy, and I really thoroughly recommend it. You know, being on the escalator and looking at all those faces and just feeling moved by all these people. They all want to be happy, and they're all putting in a lot of effort to be happy. And I think it's fantastic. So anyway, that's another practice for on the escalator. And you might be aware of this project that was in the underground. It was this artist that was invited to do a project in the underground, which is called Acts of Kindness. Have you heard of that? So there are all these posters and boards which were announcing this project to happen. And this guy called Michael Landy, was celebrating everyday generosity and compassion on the tube of this project. And partially his reasoning was that he felt often on the public transport people disappearing into a bubble, and he wanted to get more of that sense of people connecting to each other. So what he's done is there's this website, and people can send in their stories about acts of kindness on the public transport. If you type in Michael Landy in Google, you'll find, or just Acts of Kindness Tube, you'll get there. So you see all these stories, and when you read these stories, they're really quite moving. So I'll just read out one of the stories I found on the website. I was on the way home from work on the Victoria Line. It was a very sad day. A family friend had passed away at a very young age, and I just heard the news, so I was making my way home from work, trying to fight back tears on the underground, when a stranger reached out to me to ask if I needed any help. To this day, I will never forget the kindness and I find it really emotional somehow. So the kindness and courage shown to me on this occasion, and in hindsight, I wish I could have thanked that person for offering to help me and brightening up my day. So this project is a celebration of compassion and generosity. And he's actually saying to, he is inviting us to notice acts of kindness, however simple or small. So he says, sometimes we tend to assume that you have to be superhuman to be kind rather than just an ordinary person. So to unsettle that idea, acts of kindness catches those little exchanges that are almost too fleeting and mundane to be noticed or remembered. So, yeah, for me, I was just doing the meta bhavana downstairs, and I think we can often make this meta into something that is kind of huge and metaphysical and something we can't live up to, but it could just be very, very simple. Just asking somebody, how are you? Or a little smile, or just, you know, asking somebody, can I, you know, take your bag up? You know, can I help you with your bag? Or there's these really, they're very, very ever so tiny, but they've got such a huge effect. So I think that's, it really can be so simple, acts of metta. So we don't have to think about it at all as something that is out of our reach. It's available to us all at all times, you know, it can be very, very small. So I thought they were a wise word by this Michael Landy. And just to say a bit about metta bhavana and the public transport, in the study group last week, Manth was saying that sometimes when she's on the public, she's a woman who comes to the centre, she sometimes does the metta bhavana on the public transport when she starts to feel a bit like, or starts to feel like a bit ill at ease or whatever, uncomfortable. So she does the metta bhavana for the beings on the public transport that are moving, and all the beings that are standing, and all the beings that are sitting. So I thought that's quite a lovely thing to do. And I was just thinking that, you know, in the metta bhavana we've got our fourth person, and I think there's a lot of difficult people in the public transport. Well, we can't really say they're difficult people, there's people we find difficult. So I've just made a bit of a list. You've got the weird person, you've got the drunk person, you've got the very loud person, you've got the crying child, bless them, you've got the screaming child, you've got the smelly person, which is quite interesting. And as I just remember this whilst I was writing this down, I was once on a bus and somebody had given me a bunch of flowers. It was here, somebody gave me a bunch of flowers. I went on the bus there, the 328. And then there was this bag lady that came into the bus, and she was actually really smelly. But because I had my flowers, she could just sit next to me, kind of lean against me a little, and then we quite enjoying each other's company, I think. And I kind of just, you know, just smelling my flowers. Which I thought was quite an interesting way of just, I mean, you can just reflect on conditionality, for instance, like conditions coming into being. I thought it was quite an interesting moment, actually. So, other difficult people, you've got the person talking loudly in their mobile phone, and you've got the person listening to music without headphones. And so there's a lot of scope for practice, you see. There's a huge amount of scope for practice, just thinking these are all human beings, they're all suffering from the same human condition. They're born, they grow up, they get ill, they age, they die. It's happening for each and every one of us. And so you can extend your compassion to those people that you find difficult. And this is just a little anecdote. This is when I just moved to London about 4 years ago. I remember being on the bus on the upper deck on my way here again. And there were lots of school children on the bus. And I made a note to myself, don't go on the bus. You know, don't go on the bus when there's no school children now. But they each have, this is a bit of a face, they each have this piece of bubble wrap. And they were kind of, you know, they were making this sound. They were popping the bubble wrap. They were all doing it all up. And I was filled with school children doing this bubble. And it just drove me completely the bonkers. But it's interesting because what it did say to me that it's these children, you know, they're just having a good time and I'm irritated. It's my problem, really. So it's just really interesting to notice, okay, there's only coming up, I'm in this particular situation. And so I've just experienced that, really. Just experience it. And, you know, it'll just pass away like everything else. So I think lastly, and this is probably the bit of metaphysical, perhaps, which is awareness of reality. I do think that if you do undertake or try to use the public transport as a place for Buddhist practice, you could use it, if you can, as a place to gain a bit more insight about reality. And so, you, for instance, I was just thinking about the whole of the transport system could be seen as a metaphor for interconnectivity, the principle of interconnectivity in Buddhism, for instance. Or, as I said before, with the bag lady and the smelly bag lady, conditionality, the principle, the Buddhist principle of conditionality, everything happens in relation to conditions arising. Everything, every phenomenon comes into being because there's particular conditions into place, and when some of these conditions ceases, that whatever that phenomenon also ceases to be. So, for instance, I was reminded of this film, and you may have seen it with Gwyneth Paltrow, this film called Sliding Doors. Have you seen the film Sliding Doors? Which is also on public transport in London, isn't it? So there's quite an interesting thing happening there, that she gets into the train, and you get this whole story being played out, because she gets into the train, and in the double, in a parallel story, she doesn't catch that tube. She doesn't, so she stays behind at the platform. Her life evolves very differently according to these different scenarios, and that in itself, I find, is quite an interesting thing to reflect on, how all the random things that happen to us lead us to meet particular people or not meet other people. I think it's quite an interesting thing to reflect on public transport. And also, I think I've hinted at this before, is in Buddhism you've got a teaching which is called anatta, and in Sanskrit it's called anatman, which is the doctrine of the non-self, the not-self. And I spoke to a friend a few months ago who actually felt that, for him, being on the public transport or on the bus was a situation where he felt he was more in a kind of bardo, in a space of non-self, just because there is this lack of control. And so he could just... he just felt, for him... really interesting mind states would arise, because precisely because he was on the public transport, on that train or the bus, and there was no control whatsoever. So just to say a little about this is that that according to this doctrine of not self, there is it's the teaching that we think there is somebody in control who's now deciding to do this and now deciding to do that, but if you look deeply into your experience, you cannot find any self that's making any decisions whatsoever. It's just a bunch of conditions coming into being, just a bunch of mental states, the environment and the body all working together to produce particular mental states. It's not like there is somebody behind the screens or like a puppet steering us in a particular way. So in that sense, that the teaching tells us that having a sense of control is a fantasy. That's what the teaching tells us. So somehow this friend of mine feels he does get into touch with that teaching when he finds himself or in the bus or on the train. And I think this could be really interesting if you do find yourself on public transport and you find that you can't control the situation at all. And just noticing how you want to control the situation, how you know, you're at the bus stop and the bus doesn't come, and how you start to kind of react because of that, because you want this to happen, but actually there's no way you can make it happen because there is no control. There is nobody who is in control. So I just think that this might be an interesting thing to reflect on, if you remember. And for me, being on the public transport, maybe because of these conditions, I don't know, for me it's often very good thinking time. I often find my mind getting quite clear, and I have often planned talks or articles just in the space of being on the underground from with Hampstead to Bethnal Green, for instance. For me, it really works to be really concentrated. I don't know how it works for you, but I find that quite interesting. So I think the flip side of this lack of control is that you could get a real sense of freedom whilst you're on the public transport, especially if you haven't got an awful lot of stuff around you. You don't have a sense of ownership or stuff you're responsible for. So this being in transition has this, I think there is a sense of freedom there as well. So now going even deeper maybe into metaphysics, by mentioning Nagarjuna, a philosopher who's gone really, he's somebody who asks a lot of questions and encourages people to ask questions and answer them, and actually find in the process of discovery that there is nobody in control, for instance. And so he's gone into this whole concept of motion. What he is actually saying is the process of going, the goer and the destination to be gone, to do not exist. That's what he's saying. So the process of going, the goer, and the destination to be gone to do not exist. So that's, and it's quite a deep teaching, and I'm not sure that I can do justice to it fully right here and now. But it's quite interesting if you are traveling and if you're on that kind of mind space, that you can really look deeply into your experience, that you could look into that and can you find yourself? Can you find an eye that's actually travelling? Because there's something about this process of transition that we often, it's a cognitively convenient construct to think of an eye that's moving in a particular direction. But if you're actually really deeply going to look into reality, you can see it's just conditions coming into play that are constantly changing and shifting. So there's nothing that you could actually fix as an I or something that moves to something else. So he's actually saying that it's all concepts, and don't go there, just go to your experience everything directly, and you'll feel a little happier. Anyway, that's it in a nutshell. So letting go, if you do get into this principle, there is this, on the front of the transport, it's a perfect opportunity to let go of this sense of there is anything in control, there's anything going anywhere. So that is just, that's a good opportunity, I would have thought. And it's also in these transitional spaces, you can reflect on things being impermanent and on things constantly changing or processes constantly changing. There's something about the act of being on public transport that kind of connects to that truth of everything is constantly changing. And you could reflect on that, if you like. Yeah. So, maybe even, I don't know, in the future, you might want to think about if you do come to the Buddhist Centre by public transport, it's a real good opportunity to make that transition from maybe you've been to work or you've been at home, you're coming to the centre and you're going to meditate. So there's something about that, sort of preparing the mind to meditate, that you could do as well whilst you're on the public transport. Somebody, a friend of mine used to say, this was in Amsterdam and he was cycling, he would say he'd get on his bicycle, he was already preparing for the meditation. So when he was arriving at the centre, it's fairly easy for him to sit down and actually start to practice. So, just a few practical tips at the end. Another thing, obviously, that you could do is get your headphone and get an app, maybe. We were talking about apps, Neil and I, yesterday, about, for instance, Headspace is an app that you could use to do guided meditations with your, you know, just using your tablet or using your mobile phone. And you can listen to a million Dharma talks that are all over the internet. So just get some on your device and listen to Dharma talk, which is, I think, also a great way of spending some time on the public transport. Another thing, and this is, I've actually taken this from Thich Nhat Hanh, he encourages us to, for instance, when you see a red light, to use that as a mindfulness signal. So you see a red light, okay, this is a sign, now I can remember to be mindful. So I think you could do the same when you're on the bus or on the tube. Whenever you stop, you could kind of program yourself to remember, okay, now I can be mindful, now this is an opportunity to be mindful. And often, what you could also do is, if you've got a particular topic that you'd like to think through, you could think, okay, I've got this stretch of time on the bus, I'm You could, even in the course of the week when you've got a very busy life, think, I haven't had time to think through a particular topic, just to choose a particular stretch of public transport and use it to really think it through. I think it really works if you undertake, if you really resolve, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to think this through. I think a lot of time something useful is going to come out of that. Yeah. So, just having said that, I do use public transport sometimes to prepare classes and articles or talks, but I've done this mainly from my comfy chair in my front room. That was it.
Thank you.